Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. My name is Rick Vanover. This is episode 88, Software Defined Madness. Here we go. Today my guest is once again the one and only Nigel Bolton. How you doing, Nigel?
Good, Rick. Yourself?
Oh, man. We were talking just before, and there's one word we both have in common. That's busy.
Busy.
Yeah, it almost kind of hurts, but, you know, you kind of like it, kind of hurts. I can't quite figure it out.
It's definitely, it's better to be busy than bored, but I think there are limits on the busyness that you can take before you start to wonder whether it's a bit better to be bored.
Exactly. I've been trying to kind of program that 36, 28-hour day. I just haven't been able to get it right yet,
I'm working on that, too. I've made some headway, so I'll let you know once I've got it cracked.
Once I start software-defining my sleep cycles, then maybe we can really get that worked in, yeah? So I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? And if you could do it during sleep cycles, maybe you could make head nor tail of it.
I don't know, but the fact is, it's like it's almost like going to a nice restaurant. Something looks good to eat, and you're like, oh, let's do it, let's try it. I feel that way about everything I have going on, so it's kind of the same way. My appetite for engagement exceeds my ability to deliver sometimes.
That's fun though.
So Nigel, you and I poked a direct message a few weeks back, kind of scoping out some ideas of lab kit, test hardware, that type of thing. And really the topic came up around networking, and it's kind of the springboard for what I want to talk about today of software-defined stuff. And I did a little bit of research, believe it or not, before this podcast, using none other than Google's suggested search results. I simply put in software-defined, and I got five things. Software-defined storage, software-defined data center, software-defined networking, software-defined security, and are you ready for this one? Software-defined servers.
Right.
Yeah, that's a new one.
The security's a new one on me as well.
They popped up there, and in the course of my notes, which are nothing more than a scratch pad, honestly, I just put a bracket around them all, and I put one word, abstraction. Kind of sounds familiar, but, I don't know if you're familiar with the storage aspect, like with Viper or something, but software-defined stuff. I mean, what's your, first take on this new thing that's coming at us from all directions? What's your take?
I think, first of all, there's a lot of hype and a lot of FUD being thrown out there. Every vendor, first of all, is trying to say that everything they do is software-defined, mm-hmm. and everybody that's not a vendor is telling them to shut up and stop using the term software-defined. And that kind of puts you off, or it did for at least for me for a while. But when you look underneath it, despite all of the hype and the FUD and things like that, I do think there are some major architectural and maybe major design changes going on that are going to be fundamental to the way data centers and IT and the world that we currently live in now, the way that's going to look in 10 years' time. And I think you nailed it when you said abstraction. So for me, and 6 months, a year, 5 years down the line, this might sound daft, but abstraction is what it's all about. So you abstract the intelligence away from the underlying hardware. Mm-hmm. And in a nutshell, I think that is software defined. And you can go and apply that to storage, networking, mm-hmm. whatever. You abstract that intelligence away from the underlying hardware so that the two are no longer tightly coupled, if you will. Mm-hmm. You can deploy that intelligence on any, Supermicro, Quantra servers, whatever. And I think that's a good place to start from.
Yeah, but the thing I worry about, Nigel, is I get the benefits of abstraction, but I worry about, take the word from, years past, that's still popular, not as popular, cloud, right? Yeah. One thing I've kind of always centralized my mindset on is that the cloud has infrastructure too. There's still pieces and parts underneath of it. And, the real perception of cloud is somehow business, consumer, whatever, consumption. And there really still needs to be a priority to experience. So, with your comments, which I agree with you, don't get me wrong, I just worry that if we take a over-abstracted approach, we may not be able to deliver you know, some of the experience points just because the software definition may not be able to be delivered, you know, when the pieces and parts aren't right. That's my concern.
Yeah, and I get that to some extent. But if you look at Amazon or Google and the kind of infrastructures that they have behind their web-facing services, so Amazon Web Services, S3, things like that, probably Microsoft Azure as well. Of course, there's all hardware behind it, but that hardware looks nothing like the kind of data centers that I'm used to, at least. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got racks of just hyperscale servers from whatever vendor, white box stuff probably, that's got in it CPUs. It's all x86, x64 stuff. Mm-hmm. They've got memory. They've maybe got some flash PCI cards in there, and they've got some slow storage. And basically, they just scale those things out massively wide, and then they layer software on top of it. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, yeah, you and I might be scared about it, and I am to a certain extent because it's a major step change from what we're used to. But Google and Amazon and the likes of those, they're already doing it. Mm-hmm. And the experience that people have when they go to the likes of Amazon and their cloud services, the experiences are generally good. So if you can get it right, I do think that the user experience still can be good. And I am a firm believer that the way that Amazon and Google data centers look now is what our corporate data centers will look like in 10, 12 years' time. No doubt about that in my mind.
Oh, you know, you brought up those examples, and the scale is different, but one thing that especially Google and Amazon probably do best is they do really – and actually, I'd say Amazon more so, with the rich range of applications. But they do kind of the ultimate and pure separation between the infrastructure and the services delivered, whether they be storage, block, or object, whether they be virtual machines and EC2. I can't think of anything more properly abstracted than AWS.
Totally agree. And if you've ever worked for an IT department that's had to compete with the likes of Amazon, it's hard, hard work to compete with them. In fact, to be honest, truly, I don't think you can do it. Your application owners and your developers, they fall in love with it, and suddenly that's the yardstick, and you're being judged against those guys, and it's not a fair fight.
No, I agree. So, you know, we've seen a lot of products, we've seen a lot of vendors, dare I say, a land grab, right? Okay, here's the software-defined data center, and it's VMware, or here's software-defined storage with a couple of those have come out recently. So, you know, I think that the IT pro, the internal IT department now, have to be very careful, right? Because you got to know what you're getting into, and any one of these different software-defined implementations, whatever they are, all are based on a specific vendor's criteria. There's very little standards-based approach here. What kind of cautions would you issue for anyone looking at products that are positioned that way?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that it's particularly any different to deploying any new technology. IT is a rat race at the end of the day. There's new tech coming out all the time. So whatever you buy today, it's out of date tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that cloud or software defined is going to change that. If you deploy something that's software defined today in your mind, in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, it might not look very software defined. I'll give you an example, and I hope you don't mind me using this, but VCE VBlock as a converged infrastructure, nothing to do with software defined or cloud, but as a converged infrastructure, it does a job, and it's maybe not bad at doing that job, but it's already starting to look a bit ugly. At the end of the day, it's packaged products with a piece of management software on top. If I was to compare VCE VBlock to something like Nutanix, then one of them is ugly. It's a pig with lipstick at the end of the day. And the other is a much more generation 2 converged infrastructure. So if we look at, let's take a quick look at software defined storage. And I would say right now, VSAs, virtual storage appliances, like HP Left Hand do a VSA, mm-hmm. and HP's Store One's product, the deduplication yep. product, does a VSA. Now, in my mind today, That's software-defined storage. So I can take a left-hand controller, the intelligence of the left-hand storage array, and I can spin that up as a virtual machine. Now, I might want to do that in one of my regional offices so that I don't have to land storage hardware, so that my storage hardware footprint out there is going to be way smaller. Oh, and guess what? Instead of deploying a hardware-based dedupe appliance, because it's just a small regional office, that'll be a bit overkill, I'll just spin up a store once VSA. Now, both of those can then replicate back to left-hand physical hardware and store once physical hardware at my main data centers. But right out there, I've spun up storage intelligence as a virtual machine, and it can sit on anybody's hardware underneath. Now, for me, Rick, that's software-defined storage today, but it might be software-defined storage 1.0, if you will. Mm-hmm. And in 5 years' time, it might be... What, we call that software-defined storage? Dear me.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's like that with all tech, isn't it?
What we
deployed today looks like it was from the ARC within a couple of years.
To be fair, though, the I'm glad you brought up the two VSA technologies from HP, because, well, partly what I do here at Veeam, those align well to what we do with, in particular, like the left-hand store virtual has that, a pretty smart snapshot engine for the storage, right? Might as well use it. And then you can use it on commodity equipment, or dare I say, use it on your old SAN. You know, you have some flexibility, and then the management tools. So back to some of the bigger objections that you might have with an internal IT department are some things like policy and rules, right?
Yeah.
If you can still deliver this with your existing toolkits and tool sets, practices, staff competency, requirements, whatever, then that's a great way to really abstract, do a software-defined feature on, dare I say, commodity storage, or at least it doesn't even need to be commodity. Maybe you could load it up with SSDs. You know, it's not exactly great in a sense, because you might not get proper wear leveling, but you could really get high performance without buying an all-flash array. Yet you've got these great features. So really, you've got, in the end of the day, actually, I think you have a lot of options.
Yeah, and I think when you talked about management and things like that, you maybe hit on something that would make a simple VSA deployment like this really look like a software-defined storage 1.0, because I think another key thing to be software-defined is the use of APIs. Well, actually, the use of open APIs is going to be key to it going forward. And that's going to drive, I think, a whole new way of consuming and managing IT resources going forward.
Yeah, you know, that brings up that's a whole big thing, open APIs. And then I guess how open do they need to be? Could it be, you know, people in-house script up their own thing, or could it be technical marketing type partnership people get it, or just within their brand stack? I mean, there's really three separate types of APIs in that sense, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I like what EMC have said they'll do with Viper, and they'll make all of those APIs open.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I really see things working, and I'm open to being wrong on this in the future, but things that kind of just bubble up organically from open source is quite hot at the moment. So things like OpenStack and things like that, they don't have a big vendor behind it. Well, I know HP and Rackspace and people are behind OpenStack, but it's kind of got that open source community feel about it. Mm-hmm. And suddenly people just start using it. And I think those kind of APIs that come from the open source community are really going to be massive in software-defined whatever over the next 10 years.
What I think the big thing here is that, if you go to OpenStack's website, they're very clear about the end of the line, a.k.a. the hardware, and the top, which is the deliverable. It's very clear. It's your applications and any hardware, and then from there you get all the benefits, you know, within reason of pretty much anything you could do with a full-blown cloud. And I do agree that this is OpenStack in particular is probably the greatest opportunity segment in our technology space right now, because there is no vendor behind it. There are there's a very central focus to the benefits or the usability with the applications. And then on top of that, we know people are using it, people are contributing to that community. So something's going on there good. In fact, I need to download and try that, I'll be honest with you.
You know what, Rick? So I've got it downloaded in my lab at home. Man, it looks... I shouldn't laugh here, but it looks hard to configure. And I've downloaded the easy installable kind of prepackaged one from Rackspace. It's got some pretty good documentation with it. I've not had a chance to install it yet, but if I was just going to install it raw with like the you know, the binaries and things from OpenStack, wow, that looks like a mammoth project. Unless you like some kind of Linux whiz.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's
exciting, but I've not quite got around to getting it up and running yet. And compare it to something like the HP VSAs or ONTAP Edge or something like that,
mm-hmm.
that are way, way easier to get up and running.
You know, that's you know, I had a couple of those back in the day where if it's set up, it's great, but getting there might be the hard part. So that's important to keep in mind. Okay. I might try the Rackspace appliance, at least get a taste of it.
Yeah, I'll send you the link to that. But, you know, originally when you and I were talking on Twitter, exchanging DMs, we were talking about me rebuilding my lab at home. And I was asking, I think, about NetworkKit, you said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing for me, right, I'm not a network guy, so I don't really care about networking. And I get that the networking guys don't care about storage and what have you at the end of the day. But in my lab, maybe I want to provision multiple VLANs, or maybe I want to muck about with load balancing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But do I want to log on to a command line of a switch or a router to do that? I just don't want to, because I'm not a networking guy. And so I want to be able to just configure those VLANs and the load balancing and what have you, real simple. And I think that's going to have to be a key to software-defined technologies. They're going to have to enable it, so that the IT administrator of the future can just provision via much more simple means than we do now. We don't want to be logging on to 100 switches or routers in our estate to individually configure each of them. We just don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the business and the developers and the application guys, they don't care about network switches or storage or tiering or things like that. They just want a simple interface that says, right, give me this amount of storage and I want it to be high performance. Give me three networks and I want a load balance across them. And the tools have got to be there so that you can just do that. That's what I need in my lab to get the network working.
Yeah, and network is my biggest growth opportunity really as well, because, well, security too. But then it begs the next question of, you know, a lot of these, take OpenStack, take the VMware Software Defined Data Center. There might be a certain perception that the same person does it all. And I don't know about you, Nigel, but every IT group I've worked in, there's very clear separation. Server group, you know, storage group, networking group, and they're not all the same people. They may have the same manager, you know, organizational arrangement, but do you see a lot of these technologies trying to do, dare I say, too much?
No, I don't know. I get what you're saying, and most IT departments still are structured like that.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely in 10 years' time, they're not going to be. I think IT departments are going to be a lot leaner.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the Amazons and the Googles and the Rackspaces and the big providers have got solid IT departments behind them. But I think most organizations are going to have slimmer IT departments. I think the IT administrator of the future is bread and butter skills are going to be the likes of Python and Ruby and those kind of languages. I don't have them, so maybe I've got some work to do there if I still want to be a techie in the future. But I think there's going to be a lot more user self-provisioning. We talk all the time, don't we, about utility-based stuff, right? It's literally going to be like provision me some power, provision me some storage, provision me some network. And I think these guys, you know, the app owners and the developers, they're going to be doing it themselves or most of it in the future. And then the IT department will only get involved with the more niche cases.
I you know, you're right. It's hard to predict. It's hard to predict what the...
I might be totally wrong.
Well, yeah. You know, it's funny. You said power. So there actually is a Google search for software-defined power, by the way.
right.
Hey, if it's out there, I'll take it. It's just from May on TechTarget.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, put that on the list. That's up to six.
But the thing is, right, the reason I mentioned power is I've got my lab sitting to the right of me here, and it's got a whole load of plug sockets there, right? It looks like Spaghetti Junction. But I didn't ever have to think, right, well, this device wants 110 volts and this one wants 240 volts. I don't. I've got a socket that I plug into for power. Storage and networking and compute are going to have to be that simple in the future. I want – here's an example, right? And I don't know how well it works. But you spin up a VSA that's a virtual storage controller, and it operates during the day fine. And we run a dedupe job overnight, so it needs more CPU and RAM during the evening and during the early hours of the morning. So we could either script something that says at this time of night, because it's a VSA and it runs on top of a hypervisor, let's say VMware, let's give it more vCPU and more VRAM. And then come 5 o'clock in the morning, it doesn't need it anymore. The dedupe process is finished. Let's take that those extra resources away. Or it could even be more dynamic that as resource requirement ramps on that VSA, it talks to the hypervisor and says, hey, I need more CPU and RAM, and it's dynamically allocated. And I think things like that are going to have to happen more and more in the future, and software-defined enables that. You can't do that today on an architecture or on a traditional storage architecture, at least none that I'm aware of.
Well, it's peas and carrots. You're going to have to, duct tape stuff together, make special rules, complication, right? It's a non-abstracted way of going about it. Where, and this is where I'll give a nod to something that thinks from the top down, say a software-defined data center, that where you can cross-correlate these priorities to storage and virtualization elements like a VSA, and then deliver that through things like a virtualized infrastructure, then bring up, the CPU memory resources accordingly on a come-and-go basis. So it has to think big picture. So maybe that's one particular risk point, is locking into some, infrastructure component, storage, networking, server, et cetera.
Yeah.
But it has to be more of a top, and dare I say, the apps. The apps have to come into play, because that's not going to change anything. Or go away, right? Those aren't going away. So,
no.
Man, smack, so much to think about. And the goal I had here, Nigel, was to really talk about some of the thoughts, right? It's like a popcorn machine of all the concerns, the ideas, the opportunities, the challenges that come along with this particular technology space. And the one thing I do know is that I don't really know that much about it. So I'm going to check out – VSAs are a really good – thing right now. I agree with you there, and
they're so easy to spin up and play with as well, and conceptually I think because we're so used to VMware, mm-hmm. we can understand the concept so easily. And then, like my daft example earlier of a dedupe job during the night, it's easy to see how, because it sits on top of an industry standard hypervisor, and we all know the goodness we get from that, mm-hmm. you can do things that you just couldn't do before. So I think that's a good place to start, but it's probably 1.0.
No, it's not as daft as you think. By the way, I love how you use that word, but it's not because it's natural today, right? It feels, welcome, right? We're not going to make a change without making a change, if that makes any sense. We're not going to end up at any software-defined anything unless we start as simple as a VSA, or we start with maybe these – changes at the networking side. And the networking one gets me the most, honestly, because I was reading up on it, and there's a very fundamental thing that happens with software-defined networking, and it's basically a reversal of the management and the control plane, effectively, right, where usually one's above the other, and then it's the other way around. So, that might be a huge policy thing, right, that a lot of people may just back off and put a stop on it. But I think there has to be kind of some considerations, right?
It could be, but didn't we really worry about vSwitches and things in VMware in the early days that they were outside of most of the network rules and policies that were applied at the edge switches?
Yep.
And if, for instance, your VMs were hairpinning without actually going up to the access layer, and they were just talking to each other across a V-switch, then all kinds of bells and whistles started going off at companies. But I think we're a lot more comfortable with that now.
Well, that's exactly right, because everyone who, you know, became a hero of virtualization has had that conversation with networking and or management. But the thing is, Nigel, that's the thing. Does it assume that we're all virtual? You know?
Yeah,
we might miss out, right? It might be, I'm almost all virtual, but, you know, what about, you know, Oracle? Is it these? What about, you know, things that people don't virtualize, whatever they are?
Yeah, I think things like Oracle, though, they're going to be virtualized more and more and more. The pressure on Oracle there, massive, right? It's more things like, I don't know, if you've got physical servers that have got option cards in that do voice over IP and stuff like that. I think those things will be the real difficult nuts to crack. Will they ever go virtual? I mean, I want to say maybe not, but you're opening yourself up there, aren't you? Because the juggernaut of virtualization just goes on. So I think in the future they probably will be. And yes, I think you're right. It does have a heavy reliance on being virtual everywhere.
Yeah. Well, hey, Nigel, we keep it short and sweet on this podcast. We're coming right up to the 30-minute mark. You know, we talked privately, but anything else going on, I'm going to make sure I put notes in the podcast to your blog and also that Rackspace OpenStack kit. I'll put notes to that in the podcast. But anything else going on with you want to share?
No, just really busy at the moment. Sure. Probably as busy as I think I've ever been. Mm-hmm. Got a couple of things going on in the background that will finish by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And I think when the end of the year is here and those projects are done and dusted, I've got it in my head at least that I'm going to start my podcast going again, because it's so much fun chatting and it's so educational to talk like this. That I kind of miss that side of things, but just not got the cycles to do it at the moment.
Yeah, I had a suspicion that you might have had the itch, and that's another reason I kind of reached out
yeah.
to you. So I'm glad you could carve the time, and 30 minutes is not too tough, and I'll do the edit, so you know how it goes.
Yeah, no, appreciate that. Great to talk.
Hey, Nigel, thanks again for being on the show.
Sure, no worries. See ya.